Squid, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Tim. How are you? I just came back from Paro.
Oh, really? Is that so? What were you doing in Paro?
I was doing a pre-election story, interviewing people from AfriForum.
All right. And what are they saying?
See how they are going to survive all this.
It's a significant day today. It's the 27th of April, when we're recording this, 27th of April, 30 years ago, was the first democratic elections in South Africa. So it's a historic day. And obviously, in order to mark the historic day, we're going to talk about drugs.
Escapism.
Yeah, just no, it's a complete coincidence, obviously. But we are going to talk about drugs. And I just wanted to ask you, Fred, have you ever taken drugs before, or are you completely pristine and clean?
Do we have to discuss this in public? Well, you know, I'm from Holland, which isn't the most prudish country when it comes to drugs. So let's say, you know, when you're young, you need to know about all these things and how they work and how they affect you. And then after a while, you think, okay, I know enough. And you turn to alcohol.
Yes. Or pharmaceuticals. So, you know, there's all kinds of options that people have these days. Yeah. So let's just work on the basis that we've never had drugs before in our lives, because we can't admit to something like that in a public forum.
Exactly.
But people we know, people we know very intimately have had drug experiences.
And they told us about them.
And they told us about them. And so we have knowledge, but not it's not necessarily that we can and will be arrested for taking drugs. Anyway, so the task for today is to, what did we exactly decide? Is it the best song to listen to when you are going to get stoned somehow?
You thought it up. I'm leaving it, the phrasing I leave to you.
Okay. I think it was really the you're about to get stoned and it's, you know, what song will really work for you? And the reason why it's that way is because, you know, there's lots of songs about drugs.
I think after love, it's the second most popular theme.
Yes, exactly. So it's not, we're not looking for a great song about pharmaceutical of some sort. There's lots of those. We're thinking about your own personal experience. I think that's the trick
but
here.
Tim,
otherwise,
aren't we forgetting a little? What
oh yes,
been
yes, yeah,
to
yeah.
Item.
Okay, what have you been listening to?
Well, Tim, I've been listening to, and we had to look up her name, didn't we? Because how to pronounce it? It's an American, no, Canadian singer called Claire, and the surname is spelled Rousay, and you said it was Rossi. Anyway, she released an album quite recently, and I read about her, I think, maybe in The Guardian or something. They interviewed her lying on the bed, and one of her favorite things is being depressed. So she talks a lot about her depression and having all the curtains closed and staying in bed and on bed and recording music. I'm always intrigued by people who are like that. And so I read on a bit about her. It turned out she's a trans woman and she has recorded ambient music before. And I think, I'm not 100% sure, but this is the first album on which she sings as well. And it's very strange music. So you hear these ambient sounds, and then there's some sort of very basic rudimentary guitars, acoustic mainly. And then her voice, which has gone through one of those voice manipulators, which makes her sound very robotic almost. So you got like three very disparate elements, a robotic voice, swooshes of ambient sounds, an acoustic guitar, or it might be electric every now and then, which I'm not going to say I really like it, enjoy it, but I found it a really remarkable listening experience. So let's play a bit.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's fantastic.
And it fits quite well with our theme as well, I think.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I think the voice manipulation thing is basically started off as a something that makes people sing in tune. So
auto-tune.
It adjusts the and it's just pumped up very heavily so that it makes your voice sound a bit like a keyboard.
Well, the voice jumps because of that thing.
Yeah,
so it's
not
a straight line, but it's like a square little things that's steps, physical steps.
Yeah. Anyway, but I see what you mean. Extraordinary, very intriguing, you know. Strange enough, it's quite similar to what I've been listening to at the moment. I know this is kind of an old band. Let's take a listen. You're the chosen one. So that's Old J, Left Hand Free, I guess one of the most popular songs. The British band, so clever and very kind of hypnotic, sort of these fantastic grooves mixed with this kind of crazy, erratic sort of lyrics that go all over the place. It's just, they're very intriguing and they've got a big following now. And I started listening to them a long time ago when they came to Joburg.
Yeah, they've been going for a while.
Which is incredible. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did you see them?
And they were fantastic, you know, as a live act. You know, you think that there's a lot of technology. I suppose there is, actually, but in their music. But but live, it was great. It's not a kind of sort of manipulated studio album. This is how they actually sound. It's fantastic. Mm.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and also sort of like in our theme, let's get on with it, because now we're in the mood. We kind of like, you know, like thinking about stuff, about things that are intriguing listening experiences. This is your first song, I think. Okay, so that's Primal Scream, Higher Than the Sun. The higher than the sun sort of gives the game away a little bit.
Yes. You know, there's. I it's a pity we can't choose albums, because there's an album by a band called Spaceman 3, which was called Taking Drugs to Make Music to Take Drugs to. And I always thought, what a terrific title.
Yes.
And I mean, listening to the music, you think, yeah, okay, that's what they certainly have done. But you know, this song, it comes off the Screamadelica LP that they released. I don't know, I forgot around which year, but it was sort of in the 90s. And Screamadelica itself is a whole long trip. You know, it starts, I think, with Want to Get Loaded. Right. And then it sort of goes to the highs and the calm down of an ecstasy trip. Could be a bit of heroin mixed into all that. And Higher Than the Sun is like when they reach their peak, you know, when you're at right. your highest level of stonedness, let's call it that. And I looked up a bit of information about it. It's a love song to ecstasy. Apparently.
Okay.
And it finds a tripped out Bobby Gillespie, that's the singer, claiming to have achieved enlightenment through the drug. You know, he sings, I found the highest state of grace in my mind.
Yeah.
And he told Q magazine in 2016, we released it as a statement, knowing it wouldn't be a hit. It's a piece of art. And apparently the runout groove, you know, vinyl has these runout grooves where things yeah. are carved in. And apparently yeah. the runout groove reads, I get mine for 15s. And that refers to a £15 discount that Gillespie paid for £20 worth of ecstasy. So he got it for five quid, which is a bargain. No wonder he's higher than the sun. And there's also a sample in it. And it's a song called Wah Wah Man. A 1971 right. track by U.S. soul and jazz instrumental musical ensemble, the Young Holt Unlimited Trio. So there you go
okay.
for all kinds of extra fascinating information. But I truly love this song. I think it's one of the best drug songs ever released. And it's sort of like you don't guess what this is about. You know what it's about.
No, exactly. Yeah. But it's not crazy. You know, this is one of the problems I think with drug songs is that a lot of musicians have thought, well, if I'm going to write about the experience of, if I'm going to create music about the experience of taking drugs, it's got to be completely, totally wild. You know, it's you know, like that little bit of. Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin, you know, the sort of middle track is sort of crazy.
Where they go all screaming and stuff, yeah.
Yes, yeah, and the sound moves from left to right.
Yeah. Yes.
And I've always found that kind of pointless. I think the art with a drug song is to not get too carried away by the fact that it's a drug song.
No, I agree.
Maybe. And this one does it really well. It's sort of hypnotic, but you can see, you know, yourself enjoying it and enjoying your highness.
Floating up there.
Yeah. That's right.
Because
yeah,
I always had big trouble with those psychedelic songs of the late 60s, you know, where it started, I guess, with Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. You know, those sort of nonsensical things like sitting in an English garden, I don't know, and a tangerine, whatever. And I always assume that's too obvious. Like, let's pull a lot of weird things together and we got a psychedelic song. And here he actually, right. I like it. He praises the song, the stuff. You know, it's not like, children, don't do that like I do. It's like, this is the best thing in my life at that moment. So kudos to Bobby and his crew.
Yes. And especially for getting a discount. I mean, that's important.
Yeah, 15 quid. I mean, that's a good discount. What's your first?
All right. So this is a very well-known song, but I'll tell you why it's on the list afterwards.
Thank you.
okay, well, that's Pink Floyd, and the song is Time, and it's, of course, off the Dark Side of the Moon album. It's not a song about drugs or you know, it's about, you know, the kind of angst that, you know, Pink Floyd have been giving us for years and years about isolation and madness and all of those sorts of things. But let's just say, to somebody that who we know very well, their first experience with the drugs was sitting listening to the song in earphones. Yeah. And it was just magnificent, because your every sensation seems to be, you know, it's just amped up and extremely powerful. And the song is quite open and empty, and, you know, it's got that, you know, it's very absorbing, very clear. I just think it's a great song to listen to when you're stoned. It was sort of experimental, very experimental for its time. That's a long time ago. It was 72, right? But anyway, that's the story.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Why did you choose this subject?
Oh, okay. You know, because it's been, you know, drugs and music has been such a fantastic topic and such an inspiration for musicians down the years. I think a lot of musicians really, when you're looking for creativity and the drugs, they don't help, actually. I don't know whether you've tried it, but playing when you're high, playing a musical instrument when you're high doesn't work. You know, it just doesn't. But as an inspiration for creativity, as a sort of for searching places in your mind that you, you know, didn't know existed. It's been an important part of sort of pop music. And you know, it's also kind of rebellious. It has a lot of, you know, social significance and all of those sorts of things. So it's basically that's what I wanted to tap into.
Interestingly, I mean, Pink Floyd, of course, lost one of their founding members to drugs, Syd Barrett, who took too much acid, which is a good case of your statement that playing while you're under the influence isn't a great idea. Because, I mean, you see those old recordings and he's just not able to play. I mean, he's like completely out of it, like beyond out of it. And they had to basically kick him out of the band because of his drug-infused madness. And then what I always found interesting, because I always thought Pink Floyd were a very druggy band, you know, they had those songs on metal and they lasted the whole side and they sort of went up and down. And it turns out, beyond smoking the odd joint, they weren't much into drugs at all. So I guess, you know, one of the theories is, of course, that you do drugs and you get that recurring feeling when you play something or you hear a song, like, you know, if you hear something and you used ecstasy the first time and you hear that song again much later, you do get a return of that same experience as if you are on ecstasy, because that's what the brain does to you. So maybe Pink Floyd in the 60s did a lot of smoking dope and kept using that experience for their later music. I don't know.
You know, it's impossible to say. I mean, which is one of the reasons why I like them as a, you know, as a good example of music that you can enjoy when you're stoned, is because they are experimental and the musical sounds themselves are very evocative. I think a lot of bands are a lot more influenced by drugs than they ever say, because, of course, you know, you forget this is 1972, right? You know, people were being arrested, you know, pop stars were being arrested at airports for tiny amounts of marijuana. You know, it was extraordinary. The whole war on drugs was really unleashed, and it was illicit in the most sort of fundamental way. So, you know, bands didn't typically come out and say, it's not like today. I mean, the other interesting thing is
you would have to say that you were a drug addict and it's like your CV. I always, you know, because I heard Pink Floyd before I'd ever tasted drugs. And to me, certainly a song like Echoes of Metal was like what a drug experience was like. You know, like in my mind, with that music, I imagined a drug experience. because you heard those weird sounds and you float, and that music floats, not you. And to me, it was very druggy music without having taken drugs yet. So they did a good job there. And they also made it seem very interesting.
Yes.
It wasn't very off-putting.
All righty, let's move on to your next song. Okay, Fred, that's Black Sabbath and Sweet Leaf. What drug are we taking at this particular point?
If we should have started with the first bit of the song, because there you hear somebody coughing really badly.
Coughing.
And apparently it was done in the studio. I think it was the guitarist Tony Iommi had been smoking pot with Ozzy Osbourne. And, you know, pot is quite heavy on the lungs, apparently. So he had a big cough, and they recorded the cough. And Sweet Leaf, of course, is an ode to pot, to marijuana. Because I've chosen songs that are sort of hymns to the particular drug. I thought I should have put Heroin by Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground as well. Because there's a live album, a double live album with liner notes, and somebody writes, imagines a mother walking into the room of her son and saying, "Sweetheart, what are you listening to?" And he'll say, "Oh, Ma, this is Heroin by the Velvet Underground." But I thought it was a bit too obvious, Heroin. But yeah, this is, you know, they used to smoke, those boys. And the music also is like, it's sort of the blueprint for what would become known as stoner rock. And there's like bands like Caius and Fu Manchu and Queens of the Stone Age, those that sort of heavy, drony guitar sound, that it's almost like the equivalent to reggae dub. It's like the rock equivalent to reggae. And I'll read you a little quote from Billy Morgan, one of those grunge bands. And he said, the first song was Sweet Leaf, as he's talking about what he used to listen to. You know, you hear that Ozzy cough, it's not Ozzy or whatever. And then that sound comes in. And I was just like, made me feel as if I was staring into the cosmos or something. I don't know how else to explain other than I felt this kind of sense of agape. Like, wow, this is what God sounds like. So he was 8 years old when he did that. So it's the 8 year old version of what God sounds like. But I've never found anything cooler. Smashing Pumpkins, Billy Morgan. So there you are. It was like, and I remember it coming out in 1971. It was on Master of Reality, and it made a huge impression on me. I didn't immediately know it was about dope. You know, I was like, how old was I? 12. Yes. But apparently the song title was taken from a packet of Irish cigarettes that read, "It's the Sweet Leaf." So there you are. And I still think it's a magnificent song. It stands like a brick house. That heavy, heavy sound.
And it's interesting, it's kind of a love song as well, on top of all of that.
Yeah, he does say something about loving the leaf.
Yes.
They later went on, they started on Black Sabbath 4, I think. They had songs like Snowblind, which was about the next stage in their drug intake, cocaine.
Yeah.
So...
Now I'm going to take you back to exactly the period that you don't like. This is Jefferson Airplane. Tell them all, hookah, smoking pie. You know, it's a pity that people can't see your spaced out hand movements.
I actually really like this song, so I'm not going to complain.
So this is White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane. And, you know, it's about Alice in Wonderland, which was an analogy, and the hooker, the worm sitting on the hooker smoking, and the piece of the mushroom, and you know, the sort of crazy journey of Alice. They're all very obvious pointers. But I think it's actually, I agree with you. I think it's a great song. I mean, she said that the music was inspired by Bolero, you know, you know, it's a sort of gradually rising song. So it was very unusually structured and fantastically well sung by Grace Slick.
And it builds up, yeah. But that initial time, you know, that bit could be like almost classical music, I agree, yeah. Now, I always loved Jefferson Airplane, and I think they don't fall off that thing like throwing a lot of sort of psychedelic phrases together and think, yeah, well, here we are watching the grass grow or something. It's a journey in, about 3 minutes or something. Primal Scream, it took them whole album. These guys do it in 3 minutes.
Yes. But they really stamped the whole era. It was so important. They played this song at Woodstock. I don't know whether you remember the album. It was a very popular as well for such an, you know, a sort of atonal song. You know, it was an unusual song. Yeah. It was a great example of, you know, of 60s experimental rock that just worked.
And it was a big hit as well, wasn't it?
Very.
With Somebody totally, to Love on the Other Side, if I remember well.
Correct. And, you know, can I just say, I shouldn't really say this, I don't think, anyway, but anyway, whatever. Can I just say, I think Grace Slick is the most beautiful woman.
I think so, too. She's stunningly beautiful.
She is stunningly beautiful. So, you know, that must have been part of the kind of tantalizing strangeness of the band. She was also completely a rebel, and she is famous for being the first woman or the first person to use the word motherfucker on live television.
Oh, really?
yes. Anyway.
All right. You know, it went to number 8 in the Billboard charts.
Yeah.
At the Billboard Hot 100, number 1 in the Canadian RPM top singles, and number 3 in the Netherlands top 40. So there you are.
Okay. Yeah.
In 1970. Funny though, you know, it like in 67 it came out and became the hit in all these, but in Holland it peaked in 1970. I don't know why. And in the UK, only in 1987, at peak positions was 94.
Really? Is that so? Well, you know, it's sort of like people were too stoned to take notice until they came.
I'm not sure if it was, you know, it all depends on when these things were released in the various countries, of course. So,
yes.
It may not have been available. You know, England at that day wasn't very liberal when it came to drugs and stuff. Yeah.
And in those days, it was not like today where everything is released instantly, or, you know, over the world.
At exactly
the same second. Yeah. You know, this, you had to find a publisher for the music and yeah. different traditions.
And a record label, if you only had an American record label, you needed to find the European outlet, etc.
Yes, exactly. All right, let's move on. Here's your next song. I want you to dig me soul, brother and soul, sister. I want you to hold me tight because I'm out of sight and I'm a dynamite. I've got cocaine running around my brain. I've got cocaine running around my brain. Man, oh man, I've got to be on the run because I've got to be a setting sun. I've got a
hit in Holland and Belgium, and a minor hit in Germany, but in Holland it was number one in the top 40. In Belgium it reached number two in the Flemish top 50 and number 12 in the French-speaking top 50. And in Germany it didn't go beyond number 35. I was about, I don't know, when did they say? 1976, right? I was 17. And we didn't have a clue about what the lyrics were about, like a knife, a fork, a bottle and a cork. That's the way to spell New York. And I always thought it had to do with, you know, when people shoot heroin, they often use like a spoon. And I thought it was sort of drugs paraphernalia. But it turns out that it's like a children's riddle. A knife, a fork, a bottle and a cork. That's the way to spell New York. It's like it dates from, I don't know, 1920 something. And it had nothing to do with drugs or anything. It was for children. But the song itself, you know, I got cocaine running around my brain. There was a 1927 version called Dope Head Blues by Victoria Spivey and Lonnie Johnson. And then there was a 1928 version called Cocaine by Dick Justice. And then Johnny Cash released Cocaine Blues. And J.J. Cale, of course, we all know that Cocaine song, which was also covered by Eric Clapton. And there was also David von Ronk. You know, the whole folk scene had songs about cocaine running around my brain. So I think what Dillinger did very cleverly is he nicked an old children's rhyme and he nicked an old folk song, basically, blues folk song, put it together, added the reggae tune to it and did a sort of proto rap, and and I think it works so well. I mean, at the time I find it always a bit scary, you know, because he looks also quite Dillinger. I mean, there was the name of a gangster, wasn't it? So
yes, that's right.
It was all it had some ominous thing about it, and I think he does it well because cocaine is of course a treacherous drug. It's nice the first time, and after that, people want to reach the same high, and they never manage, and the cocaine starts taking over. So, yeah, I think, and it still works. You know, it's got that frantic bit about it. Hey, Jim, where's Jim? And, you know, that coke paranoia kind of thing, which he does excellent. Yeah.
I think this whole little exercise of ours would have been completely lacking if it didn't have a reggae song in it. Yeah. Reggae has been so associated with otherworldliness. And the thing that reggae did, which I think is really interesting, was that it linked religion and being high, which has always been the case, right? I mean, being in praise, being in faith, being transported in some masses of different cultures and different ways.
And even though Christianity, you know, use different drugs, if you may call that, to reach those highs.
Exactly, yeah. Even in Christianity, if you go into a church, it's not an accident that a church has sort of reached the heavens and they sort of this open, echoing slightly worldly place with echoes, and it's like being high, except you don't have to take anything except, you know, sometimes.
Well, you know, a lot of other religions do have rituals that involve some kind of medicinal element.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
To reach that state of what Bobby Gillespie calls higher grace in my mind. I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
We do the shortcut with drugs.
I mean, I think the other thing about reggae that is so interesting is that it is very plainly a homage to the sensation that you feel when you are high on marijuana. A lot of it is, you know, it's kind of very spacey with this even beat. And there's a lot of implied music, which you are invited to hear in your brain. Mm. You know, the very
duck.
Sharp upbeat. Anyway, nice song. As the ceiling flew away. So that's Procol Harum with the Wider Shade of Pale. I mean, I just love that phrase, and then the ceiling flew away.
But do you choose this for the
friends?
Lyrics?
Well, for both, I think. I mean, you know, what is a whiter shade of pale? You know, it's this very strange sort of terminology, and was sort of based on a kind of hypnotic effect. The music, apparently, the members of the band were listening to Bach's Air on a G-string, and they couldn't remember it properly. So they started off playing the Air on a G-string, and Air on a G-string has got this very descending bass. So they kind of copied that. And it's a really incredible song musically, because it goes through the entire C scale, going one note down in the scale with every bar. It's just it's a kind of magnificent. So no, I don't know whether I chose it for the music or the lyrics. I think the lyrics are the drug part, and the music is just the sort of arty, clever kind of part of it. Would you say that this is a one-hit wonder?
No, they had quite a few other. Homburg they had, and Salty
they had
Dog.
Conquistador.
Conquistador. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they were quite a prolific band. And I think it was a bit of a shock to them that they had this enormous hit with this song. But it was proc rock.
Yes, it was.
Prog,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the artiness of it, you know, it signals a kind of slight sort of turn in music taste at the time, I think. Apparently, it was also, the lyrics were inspired by some of Dali's paintings.
Oh, yeah. You know, that were, of course, quite psychedelic as well, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it was a sort of when psychedelia got arty.
Apparently, the organist, Matthew Fisher, filed suit in the High Court against Gary Brooker, who's the singer, and his publisher, claiming that he co-wrote the music for the song. Fisher won the case on the 20th of December 2006, but was awarded 40% of the composer's share of the music copyright, rather than the 50% he was seeking. And he was not granted royalties for the period before 2005. So a sort of a win-lose kind of situation, I would say.
Yes. It's amazing that they're fighting about it in 2005. You know,
I know.
Of, 30 years
that
after song the
song was mine. And it came out when it's come out? 1960 what?
Yeah. It came out just after Sgt. Pepper, if I remember.
67 or something? 67. Like 2004. I mean, really, yeah. Nearly 40 years later, they start bickering about copyrights.
Bickering about who's there. But I think they didn't realize at the time that it, you know, that it was going to remain never-endingly popular, you know?
I don't know. Maybe he also had some financial issues and thought, why don't I try to get a bit more from that Whiter Shade of Pale that I actually half wrote?
Exactly. Anyway, okay, so that's our bit. Yeah, I have the hard part. I mean, this is impossible. This is just impossible. I love.
Well, throw
all of
away
songs.
One song of me.
No, I can't do that.
And I'll throw away one of yours. Well, you can throw away one ahead. Of your own.
Cheapest, I don't know. You know, I would say the Black Sabbath song, as brilliant as it is, you wouldn't listen to it if you were high. I don't think so. I would scrap.
I think
that
in terms of stoner rock, it does. But I mean, I'm happy.
No, I know.
To throw it, it's fine.
Okay, which one of mine would you want to throw?
You know, I always found it highly annoying that cafe at the beginning of that song. That's how it starts. So you think,
it's the
first song on the album. So you put the needle on the groove and the first thing you hear is like this awful cuff. So it can go. I'm happy. I would throw away your Whiter Shade of Pale.
Okay. Because
it's I find the music not so druggy and the lyrics are spacey, but
not quite there. Okay.
No.
All right. So let's throw away one of the ones that one of our own, just to make it really difficult. All right. I suppose I would have to throw away the Pink Floyd because, you know, it's not really a drug song in itself. You know, it may be appreciated in that way, but it wasn't about drugs or doesn't reference drugs. So very reluctantly, I'll
it does sound quite druggy, I must say. But
no, it does. Yeah, I know. My veto if you want to.
Do you have a clear winner in mind?
No, I don't.
Okay, because otherwise you could say, I think, well, my own personal favorite in terms of drugs about the whole experience is the Primal Scream one. Because I think it's sort of music, the beat and the words add to quite a good description of the drug experience. So I would throw out Dillinger.
Yeah, and Dillinger's, the weakness of the Dillinger song, although it's great fun and everything, is this kind of obvious. Okay, so then it's between Primal Scream and Jefferson Airplane.
Jefferson Airplane. Well, I leave it to you this week, Tim.
You know, I think I would go for Primal Scream because the Jefferson Airplane song is, you know, it's druggy, but it's not really a drug song, you know. Well, it is a sort of a drug song, but you know, it's not, you wouldn't listen to it. You wouldn't listen to it out of choice when you were high. I don't think. Maybe you would. I don't know.
You know, drug songs are usually quite long, aren't they? Depending on the drugs you're taking, I guess. But this is a pop single, so it's like 3 minutes or something. Whereas the Prime Scream one, there's even a dub version of it that goes on forever.
Okay. All right, well, let's settle on Primal.
I mean, they did incorporate and the psychedelic and the dub bits in one song, which I think was quite clever.
Yeah.
As drug songs go.
All right, cool.
Okay, we go for the Scream.
Let's go for the Scream. Well, that was really difficult. I'm changing my mind now. I like the plank Pink Floyd. Let's do the Pink Floyd.
Yeah, I'm happy with Pink Floyd. It's fine. No, I find them all six good. So I'm happy with whatever we choose.
Hard choices. All right. So what's happening next week?
Well, if all goes well, we'll have a special guest again next week.
Okay.
We won't tell you too much about it, but he's quite a music fiend, quite a big name in the music world in South Africa. In terms of he's a lawyer, used to do all kinds of legal stuff for record companies and bands, and he has his own DJ slot at the Cape Town Organic Market, and he has the Friday song that he picks a song on Friday that he puts out for his followers. So it's going to be an interesting, we don't know what he's going to choose in terms of theme, so we can't tell you that, but tune in and you'll find out.
Okay. Excellent. Fred, thanks very much. That was too much fun, as always. Thank you very much for listening. Please, perfectsongfor@gmail.com. We're on X or Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. So please let us know what you think and what you would have chosen.
The playlists you'll all find on Spotify?
Correct. Of the full versions of all of the songs.
Yeah.
Cool, dude.
Okay. Cheerio.
Okay, Primal Scream, here we come.